Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. This is Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we welcome you to another edition of the show where we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. And we had NXT Deadline, the final WWE premium live event of the year, happening on Saturday night, so we will get into that. We will talk about the Continental Classic that is going on in AEW, a very compelling series that Tony Khan has put together over there in AEW. So we'll take a look at that as well. And, of course, hear from you callers and emailers as well. If you're listening live, you can call us up. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Love getting calls. Love getting emails. Emails are really, I think, the most convenient thing, because, you know, if you are someone who is watching one of the big shows that we're going to be talking about, for example, if you watch Deadline live Saturday and maybe you weren't sure if you were going to listen live Sunday night, you could still email us with your thoughts, and always love to go. We had a couple emails right now that we will get to today. My co-host for today to chat about these things and more is PWTorch.com contributor Kevin Catani. Kevin, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Greg, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here talking Deadline and talking various other things that I'm sure will come up in the calls.
Absolutely. And again, 515-605-9345, the number to call, wnialivecast@gmail.com is where you can reach us via email. So I want to start with NXT Deadline, Kevin, and just go down the show here. We started with Shawn Michaels and CM Punk out there. Punk had put up, I believe it was on Instagram earlier in the day, that he was in the area. He was actually at the arena. And so that was kind of a tease. We weren't sure if he was going to show up. He was not scheduled for anything on air, so the possibility existed that he was just visiting the talent backstage. But they did put him on the show to start out. You know, he mentioned that on Raw Monday night, he's going to sign his contract with either Raw or SmackDown, teased a little bit that he could sign it with NXT, although I'm not sure even the live fans, as much as they would want to believe that, really, truly believe that. Somewhat of an awkward segment. They were cut off by the music unexpectedly, I think. You know, Punk was out there with a Bret Hart hoodie, obviously to needle Shawn Michaels a little bit, and HBK even brought that up. But what did you think of starting the show this way? And just generally speaking, having CM Punk on the show, he's now been on Raw, he's been on SmackDown. I'm sure he's not going to be one of those main roster stars who gravitates toward NXT like we've seen so many others do.
Yeah, well, I wasn't at all surprised by Shawn Michaels starting the show, because I know in a lot of pay-per-views or PLEs, Triple H will usually come out and kind of thank everybody and then get the gruff voice on and get everybody excited. So I wasn't so surprised by that, but I think I was surprised, despite the Instagram post earlier in the day, that CM Punk showed up, largely because, you wouldn't think of him as someone who would be having a role on that show, in that arena, for that reason, anything like that. So I think it was a bit surprising. And then also just I don't even know the right word to use, and usually I'm not at a loss for words, but like Shawn Michaels and Punk just kind of looked at each other like, well, wait, are we doing this? Do you want to go? You want me to go? Like, I don't know. It just seemed very like, oh man, you actually showed up, and yeah, of course you can talk, but like, we didn't rehearse. So I don't know. Of course, Punk made the big tease of, well, maybe I'll sign with NXT, and I think that zero people believe that. But I do think, because if I remember his initial press conference from when he signed with AEW and they built Collision for him, I thought I remember him or someone on his behalf saying that one of the things that he was looking forward to doing was helping to put over – and develop young talent, unproven talent, that sort of thing. And if I'm remembering that correctly, then I wouldn't be so surprised if he had some kind of mini run on NXT, if it were to be to put somebody like Bron Breakker or Carmelo or Trick or somebody that they really want to cue in for the main roster through their paces to say, okay, can we pull the trigger on this guy or not? So I would not be surprised by that. But again, I don't think that you pay him the kind of money I'm sure they're paying him for him to have any sort of extended presence on NXT. But I also wouldn't be upset if, in fact, he lived into the, hey, I've been in this game for a really long time, learn from me, and I'll do right by you sort of thing. And maybe that will pay some dividends in its own right.
Yeah, I just think that the situation in AEW, with it being still such a young company and with Punk trying to prove something different there than he may be trying to prove in WWE, I think that played a role in Punk saying what he said about wanting to develop and wanting this show to himself where he could sort of prove that he could make it work in a way that he saw fit. I think he got a lot more leeway to do that while he was in AEW on Collision than he would get in WWE. WWE has their set rules of what they want NXT to be, and you know, Punk isn't going to come in there and remake anyone or the show in his image the same way that he wanted to do with Collision. So I guess from that point of view, I just think it's apples and oranges, the situation he was in with AEW when he said he wanted to do that versus the situation he now finds himself in WWE as a talent. So, you know, I think this was nice. You know, Punk is on the show. He makes an appearance. I don't think it hurts anything. It does kind of feel out of place a little bit compared to the rest of the show, but you know, if CM Punk wants to be on TV and if Shawn Michaels wants to be on TV, I guess the higher-ups aren't going to say no to stars of that caliber. So, you know, it is what it is, and then we move on. The first match on the PLE was Dragon Lee defeating Dominic to win the NXT North American Championship. This was a case of a SmackDown wrestler defeating a Raw wrestler in an NXT ring. Not exactly Taz beating Mike Awesome in ECW when Taz was a part of WWE and Mike Awesome was a part of WCW, but you know, it harkens back to those days maybe a little bit. Dragon Lee gets the victory. Rey Mysterio was doing commentary for this match. Really good match, as you'd expect. It's amazing to me not only how much better Dominic Mysterio is as a character, as a heel, than he was as a babyface, but also how much better he is as a wrestler, as a heel, compared to how he was as a babyface. And granted, you know, he's... His time as a heel has coincided with him just getting a lot more ring time. So it could be just that he's developing more generally speaking, and he also just happens to be a heel. But, you know, I think this was a right move. I like Dragon Lee getting the NXT North American Championship. Puts him on NXT, puts him also on SmackDown. And I thought this was the right move at the right time and a good match.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you. I think the only thing that surprised me was the abruptness of the finish, I think, because I was watching it and it just ended. And I was like, oh, like, I don't know if I expected at least one, like, really good near fall. I don't know. But it seemed to have ended far more abruptly than I would have expected it to. But all of that said, I agree. I think it was the right call at the right time, because I think – As Nate and Kelly and Bruce and others, when they talk about NXT and especially Dragon Lee's early WWE run, he's been taking a lot of L's. And again, at the end of the day, we know that wins and losses don't mean a whole heck of a lot to the bigger picture in all of this. But if you're trying to establish a character, I haven't found too many success stories where their road to success was paved on a street of L's. And so I think that he needed to win, and I'm happy that he won. And I think the big loser in all of this, though, potentially is our good friend Wes Lee, because I think he was in line for or there was an interplay between him and Dom now that won't happen. Now they could still wrestle, but now it doesn't mean anything. So I'll be interested to see how they work through that. to see if now Wes just gets to challenge Dragon Lee or if they start all over again. But I'm really excited to see what Dragon Lee can do with this title, and I'm hoping that he can do for it what Dom did, and that sort of make it a relevant title that it hasn't really been since maybe Adam Cole had it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to speak too out of turn in that way, but I think it'll be good all the way around. So I'm excited to see how that plays out.
Match number two was our first Iron Survivor Challenge match of the evening. It was the women, Blair Davenport defeating Tiffany Stratton, Lash Legend, Kalani Jordan, and Fallon Henry. The winner becomes the number one contender and will receive a women's title shot at the New Year's Evil NXT TV show. That one is not a PLE, and it'll be held on January 2nd. So Blair Davenport now in line for an NXT Women's Championship shot. This was, to me, this was a tale of two matches. I thought it was really good when all the women had entered. I didn't think it was so great when they were still doing the entrances. I thought there was a little too much downtime. I thought it was a little disjointed. It didn't flow very well. And once everybody got in there and then started hitting the moves, Lash Legend really stood out. I think her slam on Otis that went viral has put her in a position to get a bigger push. She's someone who's improved a lot, and she's still got a ways to go. And I think that tells you where she was developmentally speaking in the ring when she first started on TV. And then she kind of disappeared a little bit, was working the NXT Level Up shows, and now she's back in this group with Noam Dar. And I think she's shown her improvement here. All the women hitting some big moves at the end, Blair Davenport gets the victory. I like Blair Davenport getting the win here. I thought that made a lot of sense. Kevin, what was your thoughts on the match? And then Davenport, was that the right choice for the victory here?
You know, I think so. And I think as I looked at the people in the match, I think that there was a really good blend of it was a well-put-together roster, if you will, where you had, Tiffany Stratton, who very much has earned her stripes and is probably due for a call-up at any point as, I'll say the veteran, but as the veteran presence to sort of carry any sort of misgivings. Certainly Davenport belongs in that talk too, but she certainly was in that upper level. And then you had the Kalani Jordan and the Fallon Henley and the Lash Legend who were, more of the developing talent who could play off each other. I think one of the things I like about all of the multi-person gimmicks that wrestling has at its disposal, I think something like this is interesting because it gives a chance for each of the competitors to shine. Like, nobody has to be made less in this, where in other multi-person formats, people can just be completely squashed or overlooked or, used as fodder. And I think knowing that everybody has something at stake, it allows each person to kind of do what they're really good at while still having the benefit of the multi-person match to, I'll say, fall back on, but like have as a security blanket. I think that Davenport is the right call. I think certainly I agree with you that Lash has come a far way from her talk show days and certainly is showing that she can be the power person in a match and hold up that part of the bargain pretty well. So I was impressed by her. And, of course, I think the future is very bright for Kalani, and I'll be excited to see how they sort of interweave her into the storylines now that we know Blair is the next challenger. But, of course, they'll have to find storylines for these women to be in to continue their momentum. So I'll be excited to see how that plays out.
One of the things I liked about last year's Iron Survivor Challenge matches was it allowed a star to sort of be born. And last year was Kiana James. You know, people didn't really give her the time of day as a wrestler. She was kind of an afterthought. The gimmick, the acting wasn't really what people were looking for. And then she really stood out in a surprising way in this match. And here she is a year later, and she's in a steel cage match on the same show. So you know, that certainly helped raise her profile last year. And you have people, as you talked about, the Kalani Jordans, the Lash Legends, those who are not the upper echelon of the women's division, at least right now, who are getting this opportunity. It's not just, you know, Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade and the women who've already been atop the division. It's giving those other women an opportunity to shine, basically throwing them out there and saying, okay, let's see what you can do. And if they succeed, if they sort of, you throw them in the deep end of the pool and they're able to swim, kind of gives you an indication that they may be ready to have more on their plate in terms of TV time, in terms of storylines and the like. So I like that they did that this year again with the Lash Legends, with the Kalani Jordans, even Fallon Henley, who's been a constant TV presence, but she's always been sort of the sidekick to Jensen and Briggs. And now she's getting this opportunity to go out on her own and show that maybe she deserves a little bit more of a spotlight in the women's division.
Also, real quick, because you brought his name up, is Jensen the Jannetty? Have we pretty much established that?
Well, it's still pretty early, but you know, Josh Briggs getting this opportunity in the Iron Survivor Challenge, and Brooks Jensen not getting that opportunity, it's trending in that direction. I think it's too early to make that call yet, but it's something to keep an eye on for 2024, I think. The next match was Carmelo Hayes defeating Lexus King, the former Brian Pillman Jr. This was the only kind of basic singles match on this show without a title on the line, without a stipulation. Of course, Lexus King being the one now accused of attacking Trick Williams backstage, and Hayes gets the victory after the match. Lexus King gets on the mic and says he was not the one who attacked Trick Williams. So now the spotlight goes back to Carmelo Hayes, which I think we all expect in the end to be the one revealed to have attacked Trick Williams, but they're slow playing it to get us there. Kevin, what did you think? This was really the first extended opportunity for Lexus King on a big stage to show what he can do. Is he someone that you thought in this match is worthy of a bigger push or a bigger spotlight here in NXT?
Well, I'll use your own words against you and say it's too soon to tell, but okay. I do think, I mean, certainly you can tell the pedigree he comes from, not just in his appearance, but in his ability. I feel like the challenge with second and third generation talent is always how much of an overlap do I want to my previous family without trying to be like a copy of them in more ways than not. And so I think certainly he's trying to walk that line. And I thought I saw a few glimmers of it yesterday where he's got a little bit of Flying Brian in him, but I think he is very much trying to carve his own path. Certainly he made that very clear when he unveiled his name to all of us. And so I think that in these early goings, because I think too, when he was with AEW, I don't know that he ever got any consistent TV time / program / whatever where the crowd really was able to form an opinion. And because AEW allows a lot of their performers to also work indie and other shows like that, I didn't feel like there was a consistent kind of momentum for him. And I think that he is somebody that will get that in NXT. And so I am very interested to see how it plays out. I think he held his own. I do think, because if I remember right, I'll say he was out of wrestling, but like he was on the AEW payroll, but like was not on TV for 2, 3, maybe 4 months. And so it did look like he was getting his wind back, if you will. But I do think that he is someone who will grab the crowd. He has the charisma that his father did. And I just think he now needs to sort of figure out what his character is, and I think Carmelo is a great person to do it against because you certainly don't have to worry about a sloppy match on Carmelo's behalf. So, yeah, I think the right person won. I think it helps continue that main storyline, and I think, like I said, I think that Lexus held his own very well, and I think he's deserving of kind of a what's next to see if we can't see him stand on his legs, not one of the people in that organization.
We're halfway through our NXT deadline recap. This is Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Kevin Catani. This is Wrestling Night in America. We are here each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on PWTorchDailyCast.com, unless there is a major AEW or WWE pay-per-view / PLE on a Saturday or Sunday, then we will go on the air right after that show goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails. If you'd like to join us, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Press 1 if you'd like to chat with us, have a question or comment about anything we're talking about, and you can always email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Kevin, let's go to our first email of the night, break things up a little bit here. This is from John, who once again has a unique email for us. He says, "Hi, Greg and Kevin. A very different email this week and a break from the deep dives and a much smaller one. This is more of a game and thinking exercise that is geared toward getting into the minds and thinking process of wrestling fans who host and listen to this show with a situational-based question based on a hypothetical scenario." You got that, Kevin? Are you ready for this?
I think so. I think I'm ready.
John says, "I will use real names, but only for the purposes of making it more vivid. But you can apply scenarios like this one to other wrestlers, writers, on-air, behind-the-scenes staff in any wrestling company, including TNA, Impact, and AEW, who could realistically go through the same situation. Also, I'm always fascinated by the kinds of decisions people make, like, why did Steve Austin walk out on WWE? Or, if you were The Undertaker / Mark Calloway and told your WrestleMania streak was going to end, how would you react? Maybe your listeners could also have their say on what exactly they would do in these hypothetical but often quite plausible situations. Anyway, on to the scenario. You're Cody Rhodes, and it's about 2 weeks before the 2024 Royal Rumble. Raw has just ended, and you're passing through the hotel bar on your way to the airport, about to take your phone out of your pocket to call your wife. You start dialing, when suddenly you hear a conversation between a drunk senior creative team member you recognize and a producer, with the former saying the words, "So what do we do with Phil after Mania, after he loses to Roman?" This is weeks after reports leak saying you, Cody, are currently penciled in by management to team with Jey Uso to face Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso at WrestleMania. Plus, you've been asked in numerous interviews about whether finishing the story means defeating Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and a lot of positive reception to a certain pipe bomb throwing superstar returning. After hearing this in the hotel bar, what do you do? A, you don't do anything differently. You keep being professional and hardworking and friendly and saying the right things, publicly at least, and accepting what comes of it and graciously willing to accept the tag match at WrestleMania, even though it's not your preference. B, you subtly take digs at CM Punk in interviews and on social media in an attempt to undermine him and get fans and management to sour on him while still maintaining your own jovial, positive, fan-friendly reputation. C, you confront Triple H directly backstage at Raw in a quiet room and politely and calmly ask him if the reports are true and try to change his mind on the WrestleMania plans. D, you completely lose it and confront Triple H and explain how you have been the nice guy and patient for 2 years, waiting for your chance to defeat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and you've had enough. CM Punk is a troublemaker, an absolute poison, and doesn't deserve a WrestleMania main event against Roman. You give me what I want or I'm done. E, none of the above. Remember, give your opinion on what you would do in the situation, not what you think Cody would do. What exactly would you do in this hypothetical situation? Keep up the great work. Okay, because I'm me, and I think a lot of listeners who've listened to me over the years, dating back to my debut on the livecast, when I used to be on the Thursday livecast with James Caldwell, then I was on Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil, and based on my years of co-hosting podcasts with Wade Keller and hosting this podcast since then, you probably know my personality pretty well by now, and it would definitely be A, you don't do anything differently, keep being professional and hardworking. I think at worst it would be a combination of A and C, where you confront Triple H about the reports and ask him about it, but not like, I think the word confront is a little pejorative there. I think that it would be more of like a conversation to say, hey, I'm hearing X. Can you at least explain your thinking behind it? Because if I'm someone who, you know, my storyline has been built around finishing the story, and once again, I'm not given the opportunity to do that, I just want to be secure in my position and know what the plan is for that. And so I may say to Triple H, hey, can you give me an update? What's the long term? What's the short term on where we're going? Just so I have peace of mind and just so I can better understand the thinking behind it. Kevin, what's your take? Do you not do anything differently, which is A, do you take the subtle digs at CM Punk? B, do you try to talk it out with Triple H? C, do you be confrontational with Triple H? D, or none of the above?
Okay, so first let me add my own sort of caveat to this is I don't imagine this scenario happening where somebody of Triple H's stature hasn't already said something to Cody about this, because I think
I would hope because
this is purely speculative, but I feel like Cody has a bigger role in this company than just on-air talent. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but like, I think he might very well be given some decision-making powers of some kind too. And so I just find it very, very hard to believe that that would exist behind his back. That said, based on my personality, if I may mix my other passion, which is fantasy gaming, I have long been told that I am the lawful good alignment. I find it very hard to play bad guys in open world RPGs. I cannot kick animals or beat up other people. I can't do it. So that being said, I think option C would be the route I would take. And I agree with you that it wouldn't be so much a fist down in the desk confrontation, but more of a, hey, like, I love that we have him. I think he's going to do great for us, but like, this is a complete curveball from the plan that I was given 2 years ago. Yeah, like, let's talk this out and tell me what's going on. Now, I do believe, and I don't, I could be putting this on him based on his acting ability, I don't know. But I do believe that in this time around, that I do think Cody very much is a company guy from the perspective of, at the end of the day, I'm getting paid, I'm providing for my family, I want to be involved in these top-notch things, but I also know there's a long game to this. And so things will play out when they play out. And in that scenario, I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H or Nick Khan or the ownership group above them basically, I don't want to say promised Punk, but like, there may have been some sort of, you know, the reason that it happened so quickly was all right, listen, this totally goes against everything we've been building for the last 2 years, but if it'll help get you here, we're going to throw you in as fodder to Roman just to sort of get you to the top right away. I don't think that's the most crazy thing I've ever heard. But no, I personally would not react that way, and I don't know that I could see Cody reacting any other way than, hey, let's talk, but I still want what's best for business. I don't see him being petty in situation B at all. I know I couldn't be that petty. So if I'm projecting some of me onto him, that's my own deal. But no, I think definitely he would be C, behind the scenes, and A, in front of the scenes, because it's clear that his time is coming, and I think he understands he's in it. He's still over. People still are clamoring to see him. I just bought tickets last week to a house show next weekend because he's headlining the show and my girls are in love with Cody. So he got my money that way. I think that it would probably be C with then A, in front of the camera.
Yeah. So if you have off-the-wall questions like that, feel free to email us. We love getting any kind of email question. It doesn't have to be the topic of the week. It doesn't have to be about NXT Deadline. It could be about anything that's on your mind in pro wrestling that you want my thoughts on and our co-host thoughts on for that week. So always love to hear the various questions that come up during this time. So before we get back to NXT Deadline, though, we do have a call, so let's take it. It's DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first question for us?
Hey, guys. Okay, so when he did the promo, CM Punk, okay, so I don't even know how to explain this. Like, going into this, it's just kind of crazy how the CM Punk just suddenly appeared, but Cody is still on this road, and then all of a sudden Randy's back. I feel like who's really going to take over SmackDown? And when SmackDown moves, Randy's a little hurt, but CM Punk's a little hurt, but also who's going to turn heel? And then, you know, we have Cody, and then we have, you know, these other guys in the background. But the main thing is, guys, what, at the end of the day, who's going to take over Roman's heel thing? Because going into this, they can't have two baby faces, you know, as, you know, champions going into this.
So your question is about who's going to take over the top heel from Roman Reigns? Is that the question?
I feel like going into this, you know, if one of them's
going
to take Roman's belt, then
what?
Somebody's
going
to have to turn heel.
Say going into this, going into what?
Going into WrestleMania, after WrestleMania, right, when Roman loses,
okay.
Right,
okay.
I feel like Roman's going to take time off. And that time, there's definitely going to be a babyface, you know, and Raw. So who will take over Roman's place? Do you think it'll be CM Punk? Because, or do you think Randy will take that heel set of, because that's Randy, you know, compared to, like, anybody else I see under that as a great heel right now on SmackDown?
I think it's a bit foolhardy to try to predict that far out. I mean, we're talking December to January, you know, 4 months out in wrestling is a long time, Kevin. So let's go with this scenario, though, that DJ has laid out for us. Roman Reigns loses at WrestleMania, presumably to a babyface, whether it's Cody Rhodes, whomever that may be, maybe one of the Usos. It takes time off after WrestleMania, maybe several months even. That leaves a void as a top heel. Who should that be? Is it Randy Orton? Is it CM Punk? Is it somebody else? I my gut says Punk ends up on Raw. SmackDown just had a big addition with Randy Orton. I think they kind of even things out with Punk going to Raw. Plus, it keeps Punk away from Roman Reigns. Obviously, the direction right now seems to be Orton versus Reigns. So you don't want to muddy the picture by putting Punk on SmackDown and having him get involved there too. You know, the obvious answer is, you could continue to have the Bloodline, Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa, as top heels. Maybe their profile has risen in the next 4 months to where they are main event level heels in place of Roman Reigns. But otherwise, is there anyone, you know, maybe Sheamus comes back as a heel? I know his contract might be up early in 2024. If he re-signs, maybe he comes back. He was on SmackDown when he left, so he could come back as a heel. Is there anyone else you see, Kevin, who could step into that void that could be created by Roman Reigns' post-WrestleMania absence as the top heel on SmackDown?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting situation because and there have been other situations like this where I have very much faulted WWE as an organization for it. But I think in this one, this was not as intentional. But I think that the most correct answer to that question is no one, because I think they've just done this Bloodline thing and Roman's sort of living into this heel role have just been so amazing, you know, all things considered, that there isn't anybody on that level in the organization. Now, the names that you listed, I think, would all be suitable top heels. Provided that he re-signs, I think that Drew could very much move into a top heel role, especially if he continues to sort of walk this line of I'm going about it in a heel way, but like I'm still telling the truth. You know, like nothing I'm saying is a lie, but I'm finally just now not grinning and bearing it. I'm actually doing something about it, because I think that sort of take on reality, you know, and sort of blending the acting with the fact that there are people who, you know, were the company guy for far too long and got passed up and got looked over and the squeaky wheels kept getting the oil. Well, now he wants to be a squeaky wheel. And I think he certainly has everything else that could make that happen. But I think in short answer, there isn't anybody on that level that Roman is on. And it's not by the fault of anyone other than the fact that just the Bloodline has been such a dominant storyline on SmackDown and in the WWE for this whole reign that it's like there really isn't a plug-and-play option right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, DJ, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Let me say one thing, though, because there's so many great heels on Raw, but I feel like I just don't know if Bobby would really plug into that heel.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, the thing is, too, we've seen guys move from Raw to SmackDown. I mean, you know, so it's not unheard of that with two general managers now, we could see a trade of some kind if it comes to that. If they don't have a draft immediately after WrestleMania, you could see a situation where someone is traded. So, you know, it's hard to say because, again, 4 months is a long time, but also, even though we have split rosters for the most part, a trade can easily be cooked up. A turn from babyface to heel can easily be cooked up. So there's a lot of eligible participants for that mantle. So, DJ, back to you.
Yep. My second thing is, this is the kind of craziest question. Like, it's like a reverse weird question. Okay, going into another company, this MJF, is this not working as a babyface thing? You know, Cole's hurt. It's just like, and then it's just like, okay, I feel like he got hurt because he was such a babyface or blah, blah, blah. And he's not, you know, on all cylinders because he's not a heel like he really is. But then, in general, going into this, who is the devil? I mean, who could it be? I mean, I really thought it was going to be Jungle Boy, but I don't know who it is now. I think it's Wardlow now. I don't know, but going into this, he's still going to have to deal with that, and he's still going to do this babyface thing, and then who's going to turn on him? Cole's hurt. It's just like, at the end of the day, this is all crazy and messed up. I don't know where Khan's booking, and like, where his head is at this. I'm so confused. At the end of the day, this is going to fail. I don't know what they're trying to add up to this.
I was someone who, when MJF first started getting babyface reactions as a heel, there was the sentiment from certain circles to turn him babyface. And they didn't. And I was against the babyface turn. And I do feel somewhat vindicated by that, because while MJF does get babyface reactions to things like the kangaroo kick and things like that, I'm not sure it's a coincidence that AEW's creative has not been great since MJF turned babyface, and that includes a lot of what's gone on at the top of the card. You could say that maybe Adam Cole's injury sort of mucked up the creative for that, and they've had to put some big plans on hold, and okay, yeah, I get that. But it's just, it has not been MJF, you know, talking about Google Trends and the John Cena style nicknames that he gives wrestlers, you know, and from the worst of John Cena babyface era, you know, maybe he's just working on a different level than us, and maybe this is all meta what he's doing as a babyface. Like, he, you know, is fully aware that he's not as cool as he was as a heel. I don't know, but you know, it does, Kevin, make me yearn for heel MJF again.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I've heard, you know, Wade certainly has talked at length about it. They talk about it on The Fix. They talk about it in several places across the PW Torch family of shows, and I have to agree. I think certainly the turn from initial heel to babyface was organic in the sense that he was kind of what Adam Cole was in NXT, where, you know, he was the cool heel that, even though he was being a jerk, you still wanted to cheer for him because I wish I could do what he does, that sort of thing. And I think it's just spiraled into such a circus of absurdity. And you know, I part of me wants to sort of write it off as out of MJF's control, but knowing the kind of leeway and the kind of freedom he has in that organization to help direct storylines, he has to think that this is going in a direction that either he likes or the crowd likes or somebody likes, or else I feel like he would have pulled the plug on it a while ago. And so I just don't get it. And I think if you want to talk about reading the room and sort of understanding the overall appeal of what's going on, I don't think he's doing it. And I think he's smart enough to sort of know that. And I guess I'm just puzzled that if they literally are just pressing pause until Adam Cole is healthy again, that just seems like the biggest misuse of talent and airtime. And how many people are you holding back or ruining momentum or pushes for? And I don't know if it's that egregious, but you could see enough to make a point. I think that
Kevin, you're breaking up. I can, your reception is breaking up here. It's hard to hear you.
Oh, was I breaking up?
Oh yeah, now I got you. You sound good now. Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, then there was that long-winded way to say I think he needs to go back to being heel. I think that's his natural inclination. And pull the plug as soon as you can on this, because I think a lot of other people are being hurt in the intercession. So,
yeah, I agree. And, you know, MJF has always been a guy who struck me as being pretty smart about business, which makes the only reason I bring up that, you know, could this be a meta type thing is because, he has shown himself to be pretty smart about the business, you know, previously. And so that's the reason I bring that up. And, yeah, I don't know. It's mystifying, and I think it's upset a lot of people, fans of AEW most particularly, because AEW was promised in some ways to be an alternative to WWE in terms of the sports entertainment-y stuff that we're seeing with MJF and Adam Cole and Roddy Strong at the top of the card, and I think that has really... You know, you're seeing a little bit of, especially from live crowds, the erosion of that AEW audience, and I don't think it's a coincidence that it's coming at the same time that we're seeing these storylines on the top of the card. So just kind of my two cents on that, but I'll throw it back to DJ for his third and final question for us.
Yeah, real quick, though, it's like, it's funny, it's like, of all things, Kevin, it's just like these guys don't know what they're doing. It's like, you know, you have Christian as the main heel right now. Come on, that's crazy to me. But my last thing, I would like to go off the rails. You ready for this? So,
I'm always ready for you to go off the rails, DJ. I look forward to it every week.
All right, let's talk about Woo! When he said 18 to 28, come on, you people really took this seriously? You know, coming into this, his best friend is Christian. He's married. Like, this is old Ric Flair. Do it together. This is it. This is the last run. You're never going to see these guys again. He can't have a good time. I mean, he's doing battle with this energy drink that it's so funny how they have, like, three cans, you know. It's like, why don't you have more than that everywhere, you know? Remember, like, the WWE had pizza boxes. And like, dude, if you're going to promote it, throw it everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't understand, but... And the back end, it's like, let Flair do Flair. Don't apologize on social media, bro. At the end of the day, that could have handled backstage. That was crazy. What he said, oh, I'm sorry, I should leave. Tony Khan, dude, just because you said something like that, you're a 7-year-old man, you're married. Come on, bro.
You deliver what you promise, DJ. I will say that. I think my thing with Flair isn't any one thing that he says or anything like that. I just don't see the value in him for AEW. Obviously, Tony Khan has come out and said, hey, you know, we're actually being paid by Ric Flair through this energy drink thing, so maybe that financially makes it worth it for AEW to have Ric Flair on TV. But, I mean, as a guy who really loved Ric Flair as a performer and who that first set of Ric Flair DVDs that came out where they had all of his classic matches with Steamboat and Barry Windham and those guys and Terry Funk, and, you know, I watched that over and over and over again, to see him out there the way he is, that's just, it's not fun for me. Like, it's not, even as a Flair fan, Kevin, is there any way that AEW can really get anything out of this version of Ric Flair to kind of make it worth it and not make it feel exploitative in some ways?
I don't think so. I think he's a, and again, I'm a Ric Flair fan too, from back in the day, and he just seems like such a ticking time bomb. You know, he certainly is guilty of living his gimmick where who's the real Ric, and I think it, like, what you see is what you get with him. And I think what he doesn't understand is companies bear a lot more legal liability for things that come out of the mouths of their performers, and that it's not all as protected as it used to be in terms of it just being acting. And now there's actual legal ramifications to some of this. And I think if he wants to be with Sting, because this is Sting's last run, fine. And perhaps you've earned it, but like, you should really be seen and not heard if you don't want to make any more trouble for this organization than you already have.
Yes, it's problematic is maybe a good way to put it, but you know, I just seriously question the value. I think, you know, obviously the story is there with Sting and how much these two, yeah, they wrestled in the final episode of Nitro. They go way back, so it makes sense to bring him in for that. But outside of that, I'm not sure how much use you can really get out of him. DJ, thank you for the phone call this week. All right. I'm hanging up on DJ. I let him get the final word. He didn't take it. All right. So, okay, let's go back to NXT Deadline and talk about the final three matches, starting with the Men's Iron Survivor Challenge match, in which Trick Williams defeated Dijak, Josh Briggs, Bron Breakker, Tyler Bate to become the number one contender for same thing for the women. The men's winner could become the number one contender for the NXT Championship and will face the champion at New Year's Evil on January 2nd. So it'll be Trick Williams against Ilya Dragunov for the NXT title. I thought this was a lot stronger match than the women from bell to bell. I'm torn, though, on the finish, where Trick Williams gets, four pinfalls in the last 90 seconds or so. Felt a little gimmicky, felt a little unrealistic, I think, for this match. But the one thing that really shocked me was the crowd reaction. I mean, Trick Williams was as over as anyone else on this. And I wasn't really sure how effective the storyline with Carmelo Hayes has been. But the reaction he got as the star on the show just absolutely blew me away. And, you know, that may have played into the finishing sequence, you know, the crowd really getting on their feet and coming to a, you know, that final just apex of a reaction there at the end with Trick Williams, the crescendo, if you will, with him getting that final pinfall with, I think, 3 or 4 seconds remaining. So your thoughts on Trick Williams' reaction and the match itself?
Yeah, I thought certainly the ending, like the issue, and this will be an issue for as long as professional wrestling exists, is when we see wrestlers kick out of things far too easily or far too quickly, and then a similar move 5 minutes later gets somebody else pinned like they were knocked out for 10 minutes. And so I think that contributes to the absurdity of Trick's ending sequence. But all that being said, it certainly was gripping, especially with that last pin, knowing that he had under, 11? By the time he got up, it was 10 or 11 seconds. And how many times have we seen these where the third strike of the mat comes when the timer goes out and, oh, did it happen? That sort of thing. So there was a little bit of suspense that way. But I think if WWE and Shawn Michaels and Triple H are smart about this, he is over with a capital O-V-E-R. And I don't know that that necessarily means give him the belt right away, because I don't know that he's ready for that. But you need to ride this wave, because the crowd absolutely loves him. And I think it was 100% organic from the perspective that for playing the sidekick as long as he did to finally be getting his own sort of chance at single status, he is over. And I think that he's going to hopefully put on a really good match with Ilya. I think certainly Ilya's veteran enough that he'll be able to carry him through. You know, I think you'll get a very similar size dynamic that you did with Baron Corbin. But I think that Trick's a little more athletic and can do a little more that can sort of make the movement look better. But yeah, I'm happy for him. I think I also would have been happy if Briggs won, because he seemed to be the second biggest story coming out of that match in terms of momentum and holding his own and really looking like he belonged in there. I'm excited to see where it goes for Trick. I think what I think they need to be careful with, though, from a booking and storytelling perspective is how tangled the Trick and Mello storyline get with his own sort of branch of success. And I know that they're not completely untwined, but I don't think they have to be completely intertwined, and it'll be a very fine line to walk. But I am excited to see what Trick puts together here, because certainly they think highly enough of him for him to give a Herculean final 90 seconds. So I hope that he doesn't drop the ball, all pun intended, and that they continue to stay behind him while the crowd is so into him.
You touched on this briefly earlier, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this Iron Survivor gimmick match itself. You know, WWE has not created a lot of new gimmick matches recently. I mean, a lot of them are variations of the no disqualification match, or, you know, they rely on the retreads like Beat the Clock or Royal Rumble or things of that nature. This is really the first authentic new match creation in a long time that WWE has done, and we've seen 2 years of it, 4 variations of it, 2 men's and 2 women's. And just your overall thoughts on the match type itself. Do you like this becoming a yearly tradition for NXT?
Yeah, I actually really like the idea. I think where the Iron Survivor idea perhaps is a little better, or at least a little more logical than, say, War Games, is that things can happen in the first 15 minutes. And we saw that in the men's version, where I think Dijak got a pin before the third person came out. And I think that already is sort of an improvement, because a lot of the criticism around War Games is, well, what the heck is everything, you know, what the heck is the first block of time for if the match doesn't actually start until everybody's in? And so I think that they capitalized that way. And I think what it can be and what it largely was, especially this year, is it can be a second version of the breakout tournament, but for veterans, for people that are established in some way, and now we're trying to either elevate or give a chance to explore them further, in a way that has a little high stake, because now there's a championship opportunity on the line. And so I think it's a cool concept. I think that certainly you're not going to put somebody in that match that can't go 25 minutes. So certainly these folks need to have their wind about them. They need to have a minimal amount of ring rust. And I think all 5 of the gentlemen and all 5 of the ladies did that very well, because I think what's cool about this match is that rather than a fatal 5-way, the nap that people usually take in a fatal 5-way is done in the penalty box. So you sort of have found a way around the, well, geez, why is so-and-so still laying on the ground? They should have been up by now. Well, no, now they can take that nap in the penalty box because you're out of commission for 90 seconds. And I like that too, because that's a very logical loose end tie-up to something that I'm sure still irks wrestling diehard fans who are like, boy, it starts off with 5, but it gets down to 2 really quick, and where are those other 3 people?
And very often, by the way.
Yes. And so I think it solves a lot of those problems. And again, like I said earlier, it's really a match stipulation that can make all 5 people, regardless of who wins, where other versions of multi-person matches, someone has to be made less for someone else to thrive.
I agree. I think it's been pretty successful for a lot of the reasons that you state. I think it's something – NXT used to have war games, but when Triple H took over creative on the main roster, he sort of borrowed war games from NXT, and then NXT was without its own gimmick match that really could define it. And so I like that they have a match that they can call their own that is – representative of NXT and does the things that you talked about. I mean, in the men's match we had, I mean, this really put Trick Williams over. He's gotten some big victories, but this was sort of his crowning moment as having arrived as a main eventer. And you look at Josh Briggs, who this was his opportunity to show off outside of a tag team. So I really think it's effective for those reasons. And again, you know, I think NXT deserves, it's going to be on network television next year. And so it deserves to have its own calling card as a match. And I'm glad they've found one for it. The semi-main event was Kiana James defeating Roxanne Perez in a cage match. I would be remiss if I didn't mention earlier in the show Cora Jade coming back. Slightly new look, sort of similar look, but I have missed her. I think she is an effective heel, and I think putting her back into the mix makes things a little more interesting at the top of the NXT Women's Division.
Yeah, I would agree specific to Cora Jade. I because she sort of left in the middle of a storyline, I'll be interested to see if they have her pick back up on that or start her something new. But I do think she adds an element as a heel that the roster has been missing since she's been gone. So I'm hopeful that reinfusing her back into the mix will open up those dynamics a little bit.
Yeah. Kiana James over Roxanne Perez. And what made me think of that was Izzy Dame helping Kiana James defeat Roxanne Perez. The audience was left speechless because I think 95% of them probably did not know who Izzy Dame was, even though they had built it up as a big spot in the match where, you know, this was supposed to be some, you know, breathlessly Vic Joseph declaring, "That's Izzy James," or "Izzy Dame," and it's like, oh, okay, if you say so, Vic Joseph. But this was like, I was watching this, and I was like, this is like the least warranted steel cage match perhaps of all time. I cannot think of a match that deserved to be in a steel cage less than this one. And this is not a criticism of Kiana James and Roxanne Perez of what they do or what their style or their ability or anything like that. It's just this feud to me just did not seem like a steel cage match feud. Steel cage matches should be used few and far between, especially in a developmental brand like NXT. So I just thought having that cage match stipulation was a little much.
Yeah, I thought it was a little overkill as well. I think certainly they could have told that story in a couple of different ways. I get that there's a certain level of brutality that the cage brings that perhaps they feel that the other stipulations that Roxanne and Kiana have been into this point, you know, this can put the exclamation point on it. But of course, I can already hear several of the regular contributors to the PW Torch family assessing this match with the solid match but silly finish. Because, like you said, Izzy Dane comes out and Vic's selling it like it's CM Punk coming back. And everyone's kind of like, oh, okay, nice jacket. Like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And even the way that, like, Roxanne sold the look of, like she saw a ghost almost. And it's like, a bit of an overreach. But I'm sure they will, as I have learned in the past, trust the process. And I'm sure they'll help spell it out for us this Tuesday and next Tuesday. So, I think that that could have just as well been a match without a cage. But there were some cool spots. I know early in the match, Kiana wedged Roxanne's hand into the cage and then just started kicking it. I thought that was kind of a cool spot. And again, there's just a certain element of danger that that cages bring. And also, if I can rewind for 1 second, because I overlooked this when we were talking about the women's Iron Survivor, but I love how Sal and Henley and Tiffany Stratton outsmarted Metaphor by climbing over the top of the penalty box. Now, of course, the only spot of that I kind of stuck my head down and shook it a little bit was you could very clearly see Tiffany asking Fallon, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready for the push onto the table? But aside from that, I loved that they found a way to outsmart Metaphor, who was trying to help Lash take the advantage. So that was kind of fun.
Well, Fallon Henley ended up going through a table. Fallon Henley ended up going through a table. I'm not sure how much outsmarting was going on from her perspective.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. The initial get out, fine. But, the ending of that story didn't work out so well. But I think the match was what it was. They may well revisit it on Tuesday just to kind of let Kiana, like, speak her piece and now bring Izzy into the fold. And we'll go from there. I guess we'll see how it kind of goes. I feel like, unfortunately for Roxanne, since losing the title, I feel like she's lost a little bit of momentum despite them trying to keep her on regular programming and TV. And so I don't know what that means in the big picture, but with another loss, going into the new year where, you know, that last show of the year is always like a recap show anyway, I don't know how much that time off will help or hurt her, so I guess we'll see.
And the main event, Ilya Dragunov defeating Baron Corbin to retain the NXT Championship. Worth noting that Trick Williams came out at the end and Carmelo Hayes slowly came out behind Trick Williams as the logo was going on the screen, and we know that in NXT, when that logo comes up, sometimes it portends bad things. But they actually used that knowledge against us by not having Carmelo Hayes attack Trick Williams after that. So kind of a swerve of a swerve a little bit there. But Dragunov defeating Baron Corbin, I don't know that I could ever really truly get excited for a Baron Corbin main event of a pay-per-view or a PLE. But I thought they tried to – I thought the promo these two hit on Tuesday was a good try to make me care about Baron Corbin. But it's a Baron Corbin match, and I'm so numb to him, I guess, that it – as much as the promos intrigued me on Tuesday, it still didn't really work on me. This is a question from Azan. This is an email we got from him. He gave us three thoughts, and one of them was about this main event. He says, NXT has this is a question. NXT has saved Baron Corbin's career, and many of his best performances have come from NXT. That I will stipulate to. Many of his best performances have come in NXT, which I think speaks to how he's been booked and how he's performed on the main roster, more so than how great he's done in NXT. But talk about what NXT has done for Baron Corbin and then this main event here against Dragunov.
Yeah, well, listen, I feel like there was a pretty mixed reaction to the main event on the social media platforms. I thought it did well. I happen to be a sucker for the size disparity matches where one person is clearly bigger than the other, and so sort of you would expect one outcome that oftentimes goes the other way. I think it's another case where somebody who is as big and bruising as Baron Corbin continues to be booked through everything he had at Ilya Dragunov, and Dragunov took every ounce of that beating and still won. And I like that they're sort of continuing that story that, like, he gets better the more beat up he gets, which is sort of an interesting way of presenting a character that I don't remember being too many people's stories in the past. I do think, and I say this, Greg, and please understand the sentiment of what I'm saying, not so much the words, but I feel like Baron, especially lately, is not unlike Heath Slater before he left WWE, where, like, nobody wants to be Heath Slater, but everybody would be Heath Slater, right? Like, he was getting paid. He was on the he was in the company for a very long time. And so, like, you know exactly what you're going to get from Baron. He makes everything look big and impactful. But for one reason or another, he is not the top dog. And that's not a bad thing. But it just, you're right. To put him in a main event spot, you were sacrificing, like you were giving up his cons in switch for the pros you knew that would come out of the match in terms of his power moves and just really building that case that Ilya is the rubber man, if you will.
And I think I really think that's it more than anything else, is it gives Ilya Dragunov a victory over a WWE main roster veteran, even if it's Baron Corbin. Like, I think there is something to be said for how, you know, wanting to view Ilya as a strong champion and having him go over someone who has had such a lengthy run on the main roster as Baron Corbin, to a lot of people that means something.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, too, you know, I remember watching his – I don't remember the name of that special, but like they did a whole special early in his career where like he was the guy that got stuck in NXT, and just every time they called people up, his name wasn't called. And then it finally was. And I think in those early days of the black and gold NXT, like he really was somebody that they built around as sort of that big bruising heel. And I think that there's a good section of the NXT crowd who remembers that, who supported him back then. And I think it's not a bad thing that he has spent the last handful of months down there, because he still has that sort of home base there that other performers don't have. So I think he did just what you needed him to do last night. And I think, you know, where he has gotten very good is on the mic as of late. And so he really made you think that he was going to finish this program the way he wanted to. And so I for that, I give it a thumbs up. I don't think it was trying to be anything more than it was. And I think you achieved all of the ends you wanted with a guy who can very much take a loss and be ready to start a new program on Tuesday and be ready to go.
Let's finish off Azan's email here. His second question to us is, in light of babyface crowd reactions to Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, how should WWE get the most out of those reactions while staying on course with their plans? Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, it seemed like they were turning heel. Bobby Lashley wanted the Street Profits to get more serious. That's a heelish thing because they were always so happy-go-lucky and fan-friendly. But I do think there's a way to make it work. I think you can have the Street Profits wrestle more seriously and be taken more seriously and still have them be baby faces. It might be a finer line to walk than if you just straight up presented them as heels. Or you could just try to have Lashley and the Street Profits do more heelish things and cement them more as heels and try to work against those crowd reactions. What do you think is the best course of action? Would you like to see them continue to try to make the Street Profits and Lashley heel, or do you think there's enough of a babyface push by the fans that you need to kind of alter course, even if slightly?
Yeah, you know, I was, as you were talking, I was thinking that perhaps the administrator heads at WWE see in the Street Profits what it is far too late to do with New Day. And that whole idea that you can be good and have fun, but you could, like, you don't always have to be a walking cartoon. And so I think I agree with your proposition A, that you don't have to turn them heel, and they can still take on a more, hey, like, we need to realize, like, almost like a Damian Priest transformation, right? Where when he started off in NXT, you know, after every match, oh, I'm going back to the hot tub with the ladies, and oh, it's all a big party, and I don't care if I win or lose. And the second they gave him I do want to win, and here's why, like, people took to him a lot better. And so I think in that same way, Lashley and the Street Profits can still be good guys, but they can just be serious guys. And I don't think anything wrong with that, but I do think that there would be some sort of...
Losing your audio again, Kevin. You're flickering in and out.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, but it sounds like you're still. Yeah, you're still a little fuzzy. Yeah, I can't hear you. I think you are now.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, because I hear it on your end too, and by the time you ask me a question, you're through it already. But I'm like, I wonder why
okay.
that is.
All right.
So okay. Long story short, I think that they can be serious good guys in the way that they may have wanted the New Day to be, but it's too late for them. And I think that you still can get good crowd reactions with them being baby faces, but saying, wait a minute, like we should actually want to win and want to get belts. And not just always goof around and spray red Solo cups everywhere.
So Azam's third question, considering ROH Final Battle is going to have a match between Mox, Brian, and Claudio versus FTR and Mark Briscoe on the undercard, while the main event will be Athena versus Billy Starks, why does Tony Khan treat women differently on ROH than AEW? I think it depends on what kind of say Warner Discovery has in this, because there's been reporting out there that they only want one or two women's segments or matches per show. So it just could be that Tony Khan wants more women's wrestling but can't get it because the station he's on doesn't want it. So, you know, being on Honor Club, he can basically do as he pleases in terms of booking the women. And that's more of a reflection of what he believes in terms of women's wrestling than what we see on AEW. That could be one. But other than that, you know, it's just sometimes I think this Athena Billy Starks thing has caught fire in a way that is similar on a smaller scale to what we're seeing with Toni Storm. And we've seen Tony Khan take this Toni Storm character and really make a big deal out of it. And, you know, if he could main event Dynamite or Collision with it, I think he would. And so I think we're just seeing that on a smaller scale with this Athena Billy Starks stuff. Is there another explanation I'm missing, Kevin, do you think, for why the women get booked differently on AEW versus ROH?
I don't think so, and that's puzzled me too. And I guess part of it, though, I refuse to believe that Tony, with all of his family money and influence, would have to kind of change his booking patterns to a network. But maybe that's just my naivety to how networks and the work and the power they have. But I also feel like that's something that if he wanted it to change, it would. And there isn't really evidence of that. So at least at the AEW level. So if they're able to do more of that at ROH, more power to the women in ROH. And I wonder if you start to see some AEW women electing to go wrestle in ROH because they're going to get a better or more serious push down there than they are in their current program.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also say, I think that part of it too is because of the talent grab that Tony has found himself in, he has too much people and not enough minutes to put people on. And so that doesn't excuse not putting women on, but I think he feels he's paying, I imagine he's paying a lot more money to some of those top male performers. And he might feel handcuffed or backed into a door where he's got to give them time. And, the people who lose are the women. And I think that's a pretty bad way if that's the case. But there's no shame for these women if they want to continue to get TV time to go to ROH and get that TV time.
Yeah. I want to briefly discuss the AEW Continental Classic, and then we'll have one more email and wrap it up for this evening. Right now, the standings, most wrestlers have three matches in the Blue League. Brody King, Brian Danielson, and Andrade are at the top with 6 points each. Claudio Castagnoli and Eddie Kingston both with 3, and Danny Garcia with 0. In the Gold League, John Moxley and Swerve Strickland both have 9, Jay White with 6, Roosh with 3, and then Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe with 0. So, just, Kevin, generally speaking, your thoughts on the Continental Classic so far?
I think all in all, as a New Japan light, if you will, I think it's going fine. You know, I think some of the criticism I've heard of it is they build it as sort of a tournament where the best of the best are competing. And some of the names in that lineup are perhaps being charitably given that moniker. But other than that, I think any time that you can tell stories over a a tournament style or round robin style action certainly gives you a lot of avenues to start then commentating the, you know, the math and the scenarios behind if so-and-so wins, what does that mean, that sort of thing. So I always sort of like, and I know Kelly Wells is a big fan of that sort of setup as well, where, you know, you can tell a lot more stories when there's points on the line than if it's just win-loss record or something like that. So I think overall it's going fine. Certainly the logjam on the one side with three guys having the most points is going to have to be broken somehow. And then, of course, on the other side, I feel like Roosh has been getting a pretty big push as a singles guy. And to be towards the bottom of his group, I don't know if he goes on a big win streak here or if they just want a reputable name to put some other people over. I don't know. But I think overall it's going well, and I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I said this, I believe, last week on the show, but I just like how it really focuses AEW TV. I think there's a clear focus now on AEW with the Continental Classic being front and center on Collision and Dynamite every week. So I think that's something that has really been lacking on AEW, especially with the MJF Adam Cole situation and with, as we've talked about, that main event storyline basically being on hold for the large part because of Cole's injury. So this has been a really good way and a really good thing for AEW to focus their television on, and it's produced some excellent matches, collisions matches with Bryan Danielson and Andrade, and then there was the other match with Claudio and Eddie Kingston were just fantastic. So really enjoyed that. Our last email, Kevin, and then we'll wrap up. This is questions for Kevin. Is what David from New Jersey says. So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to answer these. I think these are just for you, Kevin. So the first question is, what are your thoughts on refs letting things go? Back in the day, if they saw a foreign object or someone touched them, it would be a DQ. Now nothing happens. So refs using that leniency that you know, you often hear announcers talk about the refs offering a lot of leeway in certain matches. Good thing, bad thing, indifferent?
Well, here's the deal. As someone who has umpired baseball since the age of 15, discretion is the better part of valor. But I think the issue as it relates to a sport-adjacent event like professional wrestling is there is no consistency in it. And I think that's the thing that where you can marry the logic and the suspension of disbelief is – having officials who are competent enough to like in some instances, if a distracting third party, the second they run out to ringside, there are some refs who ring the bell, oh, that's distraction or that's interference. And others know better to be like, well, they didn't touch them or it was the wrestler in the match that touched them, you know, that sort of thing. I think the problem comes when there's no consistency. And we see that in both brands and in many of the secondary brands is there really seems to be no rhyme or reason. And especially with AEW and WWE, where you have a roster of, what is it, probably 8 to 10 referees for each show. There's just a lot of variables in there because what one person decides is okay, the other is going to blow the whistle at immediately. And it's like, well, I mean, I know that's how it is in sports as well, but I think the bending of the rules is probably one of the major criticisms in week-to-week storytelling for wrestling is that in another show or in a pay-per-view, that might get an automatic DQ, but tonight it was like, well, of course it happened this way. Why not? Mm-hmm. So I think that would be my big buzzword for that is consistency.
Absolutely, and I think the other thing you have to remember is it's scripted, so you know, there are times where someone is scripted to do something behind the ref's back and the ref is not supposed to see it. Well, unfortunately, the timing can be off and the ref turns around too early and sees it, but he was not supposed to see it, so he has to let it go. And in normal sports, that would not happen. They would call it like they see it. But in professional wrestling, when the, you know, it's the basis of a story and maybe a title is on the line, a ref's not going to, quote-unquote, call it like he sees it in that situation. So there's that, too, and I think that happens a lot in AEW, where just positionally the ref sees things that they're not supposed to see, or the camera catches the ref seeing it when he's not supposed to be seeing it. So it's just, you know, the scripted nature of it makes it very difficult as well. The second question for you, Kevin, is also, what are your thoughts on rivalries back from the 80s to now? Seems like back then when Backlund was champ, he would usually go against the same person three times. Now you don't see that.
Yeah, I think, and I think there are several variables at play there as well, but I also think as more talent has emerged, as talent has gotten bigger, stronger, faster, and more vibrant and more varied, that there's more people that need TV time, and there's more people that promoters and organizers want to put light on. And so you don't have the benefit of, well, the other thing too is I think in the territory days, each territory had their top guy. And so as territories intermingled because of the top belts, you could run that rivalry several times as a way of like showing cities across the territory or across the country, here's the number one dog in each show. But now that the territory system is gone, I think, and now that there's more people that deserve and need exposure, it just seems boring when two people go a third or fourth time at each other. And I think maybe you and I had this discussion the last time we talked related to AEW, where Omega and Jericho beating the Bucks gave them the tag team title opportunity, because it allowed us to forego a third time of FTR versus the Bucks. And it's like, we would never say that 30 years ago, but now it's like, well, pick a new storyline. Like, we've seen this enough. And so I think it's a combination of talent. Yeah, go ahead.
And also a big part of it is, too, the influx of television and pay-per-views, where you have to fill – you know, if you're on Raw, 3 hours of TV time every week, and you can't run the same. I mean, you could run the same match back then because you didn't have weekly TV and it was new to every house show you went to. But now everybody in the United States is seeing it. So you've got a pay-per-view every month that you've got to sell major matches on. You've got to have TV shows where sometimes you have major matches. It's not just TV shows with squash matches and the big stars. So that also makes it harder to run the same match back several times.
Correct. I agree with that as well. The proliferation of television and streaming and network subscription and all that has made it tough to keep things fresh, for sure.
Yes. Well, appreciate David's email. Appreciate John and Azan emailing us, as well as DJ for calling us up. By the way, I umpired 2 Little League games when I was in college. So that's the extent of my, you know, professional umpiring or, you know, umpiring experience. It was very overwhelming to me, and I wasn't even behind the plate. I was on the bases. So I think I did okay. I didn't have anyone yell at me, but it was – I'm not sure I could do that in this era. So that's my story. I actually teach at a middle school where one of our teachers has umpired like the college softball World Series before, I believe it was. So he's pretty up there in the ranks of softball umpiring. So he's a teacher at our school. But anyway, that's cool. Neither here nor there. Just made me reminisce a little bit with that mention. So, Kevin, thank you for joining me here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I'll give you a moment to plug your social media and what you do for The Torch before we bid adieu.
Well, yeah, and Greg, thanks for having me, and I'm happy to have been called out of the bullpen again. Anytime I can be of service, I'm only one tweet away. But you can find me on Twitter at KP Catani. I love talking sport business, wrestling, and any sort of fantasy gaming and board games and card games and all that. So interact in all those spaces with me. And then for The Torch, I most usually appear on PWT Talks NXT, but I've been fortunate enough to be your co-host a few times and look forward to more opportunities there. And just am happy that people care about my opinion on the topic of wrestling. So thank you again, Greg. I really appreciated being on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Kevin. And don't forget, you can catch us next Sunday here, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com for a new episode. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. You can find my column each week in the Torch newsletter, as well as my new VIP audio show, Greg Parks Out Loud, for VIP members of pwtorch.com. If you're not a member, vip.pwtorch.com. Until next time, when it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.